Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Wayward Dragons. I'm your host, Johnny.
And I'm Kelsey. And welcome to episode 8.
You're already losing track of the episodes. Just wait until
It gets bad. I have to look up at my calendar. Like, what episode is this? We're only in the single digits. Oh
3,722.
God. God.
So, what are we talking about today, Kels?
So for this episode, I will be discussing the difference between a cryptid and a mythological creature. So this got a little confusing for me because the difference is so minuscule. So minuscule. But before we get into that, have you been listening or reading anything interesting?
I have not. I just caught up on like what, 4 6 years worth or something like that. No, not that long. What was it? Anyway, like 4 or 5 years worth of podcasts for that mythology series. But I've been not reading anything. I've been a lazy boy. Just because of dealing with stuff at work, and I've had a lot of family stuff going on. So that's kind of taken up a bulk of my time.
Yeah.
What about you?
I have been binging Mines of Madness. Audible does it backwards. They start at the newest episode and go to the first episode.
Yeah, I'm assuming, is that a podcast
Yes.
or? Okay, yeah, I don't get why they do that.
I don't understand.
That's why I prefer Spotify, because they have filters where you can filter it.
Same. Like when I listen on Stitcher, it goes from oldest to newest episode. But for some reason on Audible, this is backwards, which is fine. I don't really mind. What was the one? There's a lot of them that I've already heard. I think I've hit the point where I listen to too many true crime podcasts. So
So you're getting your detective's license and solving crime yourself.
that was a real thought before I got promoted. Was going to a criminal justice program. But then I realized that I would have to look at dead bodies, and dead bodies creep me out. That's one thing. Like, I'm okay with my grandma not having a funeral, memorial. Dead bodies creep me out. I don't know if I could ever get desensitized to that, because it's a real was a real person. So I decided not to pursue that. I just watch a lot of detective shows and listen to a lot of true crime and read a lot of true crime instead. But I've hit the point where like I'm starting to hear, and it's becoming the point where it's like the little cases. It's not the big ones like Ted Bundy. It's the smaller ones now. So,
Interesting.
yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm just happy that I can, not avoid things now on the internet because.
Oh, that's right. You unsaw Spider-Man.
Yes.
How
Yes.
was that?
Without giving any spoilers, it was enjoyable, but thanks to people who have leaked stuff online, a bit predictable.
Okay.
But yeah, no, overall it was fun. It was nice.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
There's a, as per a lot of Marvel movies that they've done with the MCU, it can be a bit of a roller coaster ride emotionally.
Yeah.
I teared up in a few scenes.
Aww.
So, but then I was dying laughing in a few scenes, and it was
Right?
really annoying because like I was the on several of those, I was the only person in the theater laughing, but I'm dying laughing and just like, come on, guys, that was funny.
Come on.
Like, Ned makes a promise to Peter while they're in the science lab at school, and I was dying laughing. And for those of you who go and see it, you'll know exactly which line I'm talking about and which promise I'm talking about that I was cracking up at. But yeah, everyone else was just like crickets in the theater. And I'm like, come on, guys.
Don't you hate that?
I often find things funny that other people don't, so yeah, whatever.
That's true. My co-host is now here, so I guess it's time to begin this. So for this, we're going to go into what is a cryptid, what is cryptozoology, examples of cryptids, plus some minor well-known evidence. I can only find a few examples. And then we'll go into what a mythical creature is, and then examples of mythical creatures.
Okay.
So that's how my notes are. That's how we're rolling. There's a cryptozoology museum actually in Switzerland.
I'm not surprised.
No, I wasn't either. But there are like the Smithsonian did like a cryptid kind of exhibit at one point. But thought that was rather interesting, that museum in Switzerland. So cryptozoology, and I'm gonna say this word wrong so many times.
Cryptozoology?
Nope. Because the next word I'm about to say. Okay. No. Pseudoscience? I'm gonna say pseudoscience wrong a lot, and I'm apologizing.
You said it correctly, though.
I did, because I had to, like, enunciate it in my brain.
Gotcha.
Cryptozoology is considered a pseudoscience, and it also has its own subculture that aims to prove the existence of entities from folklore record. And a cryptid is what they study. And a cryptid was coined in 1983. Got that backwards. 1983 by cryptozoologist J.E. Wall in the summer issue of the International Society of Cryptozoology newsletter. He wanted to have it be used in place of the word monster. So instead of using like the Loch Ness Monster or the Jersey Devil Monster, he wants people to use cryptid instead. He felt like it was kind of like an outdated term, that it wasn't, that monster was just too scary almost. And he wanted to have a more modern term, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to use the use of cryptid instead of monster, because he felt like these were living things, but you just couldn't find them. Like Bigfoot.
So there's a lot of this, and this, you may get into this later, but there's a lot of creatures that are cryptids that I've seen that show up in different mythologies.
Yes.
So you're gonna get into that a bit. Okay.
Yes. So yeah. They don't use a normal scientific method to prove that they are real, so they become both.
Okay.
So, it's a mythical creature because that's what it was, but there is some form of evidence, whether it's a sighting, an eyewitness account, EVP, like ghost hunting. It's basically like all your ghost hunting equipment is what people use to prove that that mythological creature is real. So, that's where you get the in-between, where it's both.
Okay.
I
have a theory on that, but I'll get into that later.
So that's why it's considered a pseudoscience, because they don't use the proper scientific method to prove that these things are real, and a lot of other reasons, which we'll get into in a minute. But that's basically what cryptozoology is we're going to use, you know, motion sensing cameras, audio recordings, eyewitness accounts, which are sometimes proven wrong, or like photos or something, like the famous photo of the Loch Ness Monster, the surgeon's photo that everyone knows, that's mm-hmm. been considered a hoax, but people still say it's a real photo, and even though it's been proven that it's a wooden thing stuck to a submarine, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not like your normal, like, way of proving something's real, you know. Like, if you burn lithium, it's going to turn green. You know, it doesn't matter how many times you do it, it's always going to be green. You know, you go out to the forest and go hunt for Bigfoot or Yeti, you may not always get the same evidence every time. It's weird. So what is a pseudoscience? Pseudoscience consists of statements, beliefs, or practices that claim to be both scientific and factual, but are incompatible with the scientific method. So that's why it's considered a pseudoscience, is because they don't use normal logic. Unfortunately, they don't use normal logic. And because they don't use normal logic, a lot of them don't have normal, like, scientific backgrounds. A lot of these cryptozoologists don't have any scientific background whatsoever. Like, not even a biology degree. Nothing. You know, these are just, it's like being an armchair detective. You know, you don't have all the qualifications to be an investigator, but you're claiming that you're a detective type thing. You know, none of these people have any formal scientific background and they're claiming to be cryptozoologists. There's no university or college that will give you a cryptozoology degree.
There are no credible
Yes.
colleges. You can pay for a degree in almost anything online. It's just a matter of whether it's credible or not.
Yeah. It will more than likely be a not very credible degree. They do, however, do credential mongering. A lot of them do. They'll say, oh, you have a biology degree, so we're going to put that in front, saying that, oh, you know what you're talking about because you have a biology degree, but you might have a biology degree in, like, bugs or something that's not related to not the Mothman, but, I mean, we'll get there.
Listen, Mothman is totally related to
bugs.
I was trying to think of the actual name of the scientists that investigate bugs. Is it ornithologist?
I don't know. But they use their degree as, like, a front of, like, they know what they're talking about. They're our expert. They know what they're talking about.
No, ornithologist is birds.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, you could use that. So they do a lot of that in the field, is they do credential mongering in front of, like, oh, hey, we have this degree in this, and we're going to talk about this way off in left field. But like I've said, a lot of the evidence that they do provide, a lot of times, is a hoax. I'm not saying that your eyewitness account isn't fake. I'm just saying that a lot of photos and things now can be edited. You know, a lot of things can be photoshopped.
Listen, I saw this picture. I swear. It was a velociraptor holding a rocket launcher riding a shark. It was 100% not photoshopped.
Okay. All right. We're going to touch on the subculture part of this. So there is a subculture, and you bringing up dinosaurs is what's bringing this up, called Young Earth Creationism. Have you heard about this? Have you heard about this?
This is Earth Creationism.
This is a form, this is a subculture of cryptozoology.
This does not sound familiar.
Okay. It's a rejection of conventional science in favor of a biblical interpretation and promoting concepts such as living dinosaurs. Okay?
Okay.
They are well-funded.
Huh. There's a few of those in Congress.
Yes. That's a good one. I'll applaud you for that one. That's good. But they conduct expeditions with the goal of finding a living dinosaur that would then prove that evolution is invalid.
Okay.
That made my head hurt while I read that.
Fun fact, Darwin was an occultist.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've read that in a couple different places. Because there's different, I was reading about different levels of cryptozoology, which then kind of confused me. But occultist, there's an occultist part of cryptozoology, which I got really confused about. I didn't write that down.
Would that be like?
I didn't even click on the part of the wiki page. I didn't even click on it because I did not even want to get any more confused than I already was.
I would love for you to send me that link if you have it available later.
Yeah. Because it was like, she describes that there's like four different levels of cryptozoology that are kind of always present. And I was just like, what? How are there different levels? What? I was like, they study cryptids and they're assholes. Like, it's like those kids that no matter what you say, no matter how wrong they are, that they, even though they know they're wrong, they don't care. Here we are. It's those kids. So we talked about what cryptozoology is, what a cryptid is. So things that you can't find, that there's some form of evidence, whether it's eyewitness accounts, that proves them to be real.
So, based off the laws of quantum mechanics... and multiverse theory, which there's a lot of more evidence backing this up, I propose the theory that a lot of these creatures are in existence, just not in this universe, and that they either pass over or bleed into our universe.
So we'll get into this later.
Okay.
When I talk about known cryptids, yeah, we'll talk about this in a minute. We'll talk about this in a minute. I need to get you and my boyfriend together. Just, y'all could just chat it out. Because that's a Bigfoot theory. It's Bigfoot. Is Bigfoot goes, is a multi-universe, multi-dimensional being.
I can see that.
So, we'll talk about that later because there's an amazing podcast. So, we'll talk about that in a minute. So most cryptids that you will find are framed as the subject of an indigenous legends. Like a, nowadays it's like a skinwalker, werewolves. I'm trying to think.
Wendigo. Off the top of my
head. Thank you. That was on the tip of my tongue. A lot of people with the Wendigo. You have that they're kind of all indigenous legends. And they were typically collected in the heyday of comparative folklore, but they were modified and made worse. And they were kind of appropriated in a not so good way. Most cryptozoologists, they don't play nice because the fact that their science isn't real. They don't have real degrees. They're not considered accredited science. So in turn, there's a lot of disdain from the cryptozoologist towards other scientists, because the other scientists basically say that, yo, this is not what this is, this is wrong, this is a hoax type thing. So of course you're not gonna like people that poke holes in your story and prove you wrong, which makes a lot of sense.
Kind of like a lot of ancient astronaut theorists.
Yes.
Some of those are just fun.
Oh yeah. But that, like, doing this research, I basically came to the conclusion that cryptozoologists are people that don't play well with others. They don't play well with other scientists, even within their own community. They just don't, because you have constant people poking holes in your story, which is fine. But J.E. Well, he created this cryptozoology and this cryptic culture because he wanted to keep a sense of wonder within the world. Because you think by now we have everything mapped. And we don't.
We really don't, though.
We don't.
I mean, just because we can see it by satellite does not mean we can have it mapped. I mean, we don't even have but like a tenth of the ocean mapped.
Yeah.
Much less all of it. Like, there's so many things out there that we don't even know about. They're finding new species of animals all the time.
Yeah. And the thing is with this new, with when you find a new species, you have a physical specimen. You know, with these cryptids, you don't have them. You know, the fur that they thought was Bigfoot, a lot of that isn't Bigfoot. So you have this evidence from so long ago that everyone's like, this is what this is. And now that we have modern technology, we're like, yeah, no, this is not what this is. There is some weirdness still that happens. Mm-hmm. There is some fur that they cannot explain. But that's why he came up with this whole cryptid thing, was we still don't know everything. And to kind of give the monsters of legend kind of like a reamp in a way, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I'm going to list well-known cryptids. I found one that was hilarious.
Is it the Swamp?
No. I found one local to Ohio called the Loveland Frog.
Okay, yeah, the Loveland Frogs.
It's a frog humanoid being, which I thought was kind of interesting. But you have Champ or Champy that lives in Lake Champlain. You have the Loch Ness Monster in Loch Ness, Scotland. Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti. There are a lot of other names that he does go by, because that is a regional being. With Bigfoot, what?
Do you know what the Squonk is?
No.
So Squonk is from Pennsylvania, and it is a fun one because it looks like it's completely hideous and it's known for being hideous, but it cries all the time because people make fun of it because it's ugly. And that's literally its whole thing. I'm sad this. Because nobody likes me.
Yeah. Which I The thing with Bigfoot, because we already talked about this famous surgeon photo from, sorry, buddy, I hit you in the face. From 1934, that's the photo of Nessie that everyone thinks is her. It's black and white. It's not. It is a wooden cutout stuck to a submarine. So the most famous evidence that we have of Bigfoot is the 1967 short film by Roger Pattinson and Bob Ginley. It's the famous video where you see Bigfoot kind of walking nonchalant.
And he stops and looks at the camera.
He stops and looks and he keeps going. There is a website called outsideonline.com. They have an article of the 10 best photos/sightings of Bigfoot.
Didn't they own up to that being a fake?
I don't know. I didn't think it was.
I felt like one of them on their deathbed owned up to being fake or something.
I don't know. And then there is a podcast called Sasquatch Chronicles, and it's over 400 episodes, and it is firsthand accounts of seeing Bigfoot. So they interview, that's all it is they interview, and these people tell their stories of seeing Bigfoot or Yeti.
I thought I saw Bigfoot in my bathroom one morning, but it was just me and I was half asleep.
You're ridiculous. I hate you. The thing with Bigfoot is it's a lot of firsthand accounts, or it's a lot of footprints. Some of the footprints do have ridge points like you do with your hands and our feet. We do have like toe prints. A lot of the Bigfoot footprints have toe prints. So I thought that was interesting. I have to.
Oh, you okay?
They're a cat. They have 9 lives.
My cat just fell off the table, guys.
Oh, Apollo freaking did a chest one last week. Like, boom! Took the corner. Right to the chest. I do have to put a special spotlight on Bigfoot. So, big Bigfoot believers in this house. You have British big cats. So, there's a couple beasts of Britain, which I found kind of interesting. My second favorite, only because I like seeing this word, is the chupacabra, the goat sucker. So that's a little bit more of a modern one, but it was originally only seen in Puerto Rico. And there is a photo that they later debunked as a hairless coyote, like it had mange.
So there's a lot of fun stuff for the chupacabra and like its mm-hmm. variations. There was yes. There used to be a show that unfortunately only lasted one season that was on Animal Planet. I watched it back in high school. But it was called Animal X, and that's all they did was cryptids. So like each episode was a different cryptid. But they had one on the chupacabra and all of its weirdness.
Yes.
They had some really interesting theories.
Mm-hmm. I just like saying chupacabra. Mongolian death worm.
Yes, the Mongolian death worm is fun.
Lives in the Gobi Desert.
That's what the sandworms from Beetlejuice are based off of.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You have the Jersey Devil. That's mainly in South Jersey. It's a winged bipedal horse. So a winged 2-foot horse. My favorite, which we'll talk about next episode, the Mothman. He is my favorite. Yowie? Y-O-W-I-E.
I was fixing to say, Yowie is something you probably shouldn't tell people to look up.
Yes. Don't do it.
Because that will probably come up something very different than cryptids.
Yes. But is a cryptid based in Australia? It kind of sounds like it's their Bigfoot in a way.
Yeah. So that's the interesting thing to me about Bigfoot or Bigfoot adjacent type creatures is there is something similar in so many cultures all around the world.
Yep. He's because like that was the weird part about like looking up the list of cryptids on Wikipedia. Like it shows Bigfoot, Sasquatch, US, Canada, and I'm like, that's wrong.
Yeah, because you also have the Yeti, you have the skunk ape.
I was like, the next one on the list is the skunk ape, which is Florida's version of Bigfoot.
It's really just Florida man.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You have all different types of sea serpents. Didn't really give me a list of things. So
a lot of those that the sailors saw or that they thought were mermaids are believed to be whale penises.
Mm-hmm. Or manatees.
Well, have you seen a picture of a whale penis?
I don't want to know. Don't want to know. Don't.
It looks just like a beautiful woman.
Mm, yeah, okay. It's like, I don't believe you.
It's just as believable as the raptor riding a shark. Yes. By the way, I sent that to you all.
I know, I like finally looked at my phone. I was like, what the fuck did you send me? It's like Johnny sent you photo. What?
100% not Photoshop, guys.
100%. Monkey Man of Delphi, kind of. Yeah, it's a big black monkey man. So I thought in old Delphi, India. Huh. Wikipedia was very specific.
When you said Delphi, I automatically thought of the oracles of Delphi and Greece.
Yeah, no, we already went over. There's no like major evidence with cryptids. Like I typed it into Google, nothing really popped up because it's a lot of like eyewitness accounts and stuff. So I was like, okay, it's disappointing.
So the popular theories surrounding that would be either A, it's a government cover-up, and the government has a bureau that's out to get, you know...
They're going to show up at my door any minute.
They're, You guys don't hear this podcast. That's why. Although, if you don't hear this podcast, you wouldn't know that. So...
No. Yeah. 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 So that made me sad. I was like... Because a lot of the cryptid evidence does eventually come out to be some form of hoax or very hard to prove. So
you that's mean the like thing. The mermaid skeleton?
Well, and that's like the other part I was running into was back then you could get away with, oh, this is a mermaid. That's not a mermaid.
Literally, you just connected the skeleton of a fish and a monkey.
Yep, he did do that. So that was the one thing I found with cryptozoology, is you're basically trying to prove that this mythological creature is real. You're trying to prove that it's a cryptid, that it's a modern monster through some sketchy science, in a way.
I mean, I don't know. I'm still a firm believer that, you know, dimensional rifts, multiverse, and all that.
Oh, yeah. I'm just playing the other part in this argument.
Also, moldy bread.
So many times I hate you.
Listen, man. Witch trials.
Listen, bro.
No, you bro.
Bruh. Okay, so now that we have covered what is cryptozoology, it's the study of cryptids. Cryptid is a creature that they have proved that is somewhat real through either eyewitness testimony or some sketchy photos, some grainy photos or video to prove that it exists. It's basically what we're at. So what is a mythical creature? Well, we're going to get into that and a lot of weird stuff because I just kept writing mythical creatures down. So many.
I mean,
there's a lot.
There are a lot.
There's a lot. So a mythical creature is a supernatural animal or paranormal entity. It's generally a hybrid. So like part human, part animal, whose existence has not or cannot be proven. And that is described in some form of folklore.
Well, a lot of them are also just anthropomorphic personifications of the animal as well.
Yes. We'll get in some allegory stuff. We're about to get weird.
About to?
Yes. Yes. We gotta go through a couple steps first.
Oh.
So you had mythical creatures that were supposed to be defeated in some form of heroic way. So you have like your Cyclops or your Minotaur, and then you had creatures like the unicorn that had accounts in natural history by various scholars back then. And then you had creatures of mythology like your dragons and your griffins. I watched a TikTok the other day. I almost sent it to you. Of that dragons are a multidimensional creature because they are everywhere around the globe, just in different forms, in every form of mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna send it to you.
So I have like probably every book that has been written and published about dragons in relation to magical practices and stuff like that. Yeah. So in mythology. So yeah, now I get you.
And then you had mythical creatures that are based on real encounters. And I wrote down a weird example. The vegetable lamb of Tartary. Apparently, this is from Central Asia, but a lamb basically would grow from like a beanstalk and be like a flower at the end. Like it was attached to the plant. And it would grow off the plant, never leave the plant. And as soon as it ate everything that it could get to, it would then die.
That's not the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
No, I just thought it was funny. Because like the photo looked like a lamb as a flower.
I mean, have you heard of the Green Children of Woolpit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's not even the weirder. Like, it gets so weird.
I mean, How weird are you gonna go? Because, you know, Pegasus came from one. Perseus cut off Medusa's head. Pegasus flew out of Medusa's head. So
we're not gonna get into origin tales. I figured as we kind of do our coffee bean episodes like this, these will be.
Uh-huh.
We'll just kind of pop them in there.
I was just wondering how weird you were wanting to get.
I didn't write a lot of them down. I just started giggling maniacally. The gingerbread man is considered a mythical creature.
Not the gumdrop puppet.
So, I thought that was kind of cool. Just like Frankenstein's monster is considered a mythical creature.
Frankenstein,
tomato, tomato.
Sorry, now you've just got me doing movie quotes.
Gotta save them. So a variety of creatures appear in art and stories basically during the classical period. So you have basically the Odyssey. They have the story of Odysseus and his whole trial to get home, him defeating the Cyclops and the Sirens and all those creatures. You have the tales of Medusa, the Minotaur off Crete, the Hydra, all the tales of Heracles, all that jazz. But the basic function of these stories and the basic function of these creatures was to put the emphasis on how great these heroes were. That's the purpose of these creatures. Of like, look how great Heracles is. He killed Hydra. But you also see things that like cross. So the centaur, the triton, and then the flying horse also appear in Indian art. And then you have Sphinx that kind of cross. They kind of become different things, but kind of the same thing. In Indian art, in North America art, Northern Indian art. But then things kind of shift. So these animals are just seen as creatures. That's all they are, is these creatures. But then when we get to the medieval era, these creatures kind of shift. And then they start to become symbols. And there's a lot of allegory that comes in because the church starts getting involved. So shit gets weird. Because now these things are being turned into things that they're not. So like the unicorn, for example. The tale of the unicorn, how to catch a unicorn, was always, because they're fast creatures, you couldn't capture them with normal methods. You had to find a virgin. And I want to know this. Why are virgins always women?
Okay, so to kind of get into that, so from a biblical standpoint, it's just kind of where a lot of that comes from, or it comes in like other cultures too, but virgin is a common misconception based off of current vernacular as far as what a virgin actually means. It does not necessarily mean that you've never had sex.
Okay.
But typically when it comes to things like that, it is sex is a sacred art, and sex is a sacred thing through many a culture.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, the vagina is what brings life into the world, and with biological females having a vagina, that's typically where the power lies, and so that's typically where the reverence of that lies, in the aspect of having a virgin that is a female. In some cultures it's not always a female, but the ones when they do specifically list females, it typically ties into that, and the virginity is not necessarily their sexuality. A lot of times originally virgin just meant that a woman was not wed or was not that someone was not bound to someone else. You know, biologically speaking, you know, virgin isn't actually a thing. I mean, yeah, your hymen busts, but your hymen can also bust from riding a horse, and yeah, you know, you're not going to go around saying that a horse took your virginity.
Gotcha.
From a biological standpoint, there's really nothing there. It's really just the tying in the sacredness of the ability to bring in life with whatever you're manifesting, because you're manifesting and bringing in something into reality.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That was just a question I had about writing this down.
Yeah.
So in order to catch a unicorn,
You need someone who's not married.
You need a virgin. And you need to take them to the dwelling in which you think the unicorn lives. And if the unicorn's there, it will get into, like, jump into her lap and go to sleep. And then you can capture the unicorn that way.
There's a really fun story with virgins, both a male and a female, tying into the Journey to the West, the story of the Monkey King.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, the shortened version is there's a village who... you saw my cat's tail.
What is that?
And a cat butt. But there's a village who's being accosted by this river monster. And so you have, they send a yearly sacrifice of a virgin boy and virgin girl to this river monster. And the Monkey King and one of his companions goes and checks it out and, like, fight this monster. And come to find out it's an escaped, like, celestial goldfish from a goddess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, people are sacrificing virgins to goldfish.
Hey, whatever you gotta do.
Times are hard, man. Feed them fishies.
But the allegory of the whole story of the unicorn. An allegory is a narrative or visual representation in which a character, place, or event can be interpreted to represent a hidden meaning with a moral or political significance. This became really huge with art, mythical creatures specifically, once the church started putting its little fingers and everything. Because the unicorn became a metaphor for Jesus Christ. And it basically represented the idea of his innocence and his purity. However, when they were translating the Bible into the King James Bible, they misinterpreted a word, which now means wild ox. So back then they interpreted it to mean unicorn, and it doesn't. They mistranslated the Hebrew.
Wait, they mistranslated Hebrew? That's never happened.
Yeah, in Psalm 92, verse 10, it talks about a unicorn horn. They mistranslated. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Hebrew word, but they basically, the Hebrew word for wild, that later becomes wild oxen, got translated into unicorn in the King James Bible. So that's where you start to get the unicorn in art started to represent Christ, Jesus, his purity, his humility, and stuff like that. That's why they're seen as small.
There is actually a really good movie about unicorns, and it's not The Last Unicorn.
Mm.
It has Tom Cruise in it before he went crazy, and Tim Curry.
Ooh.
Called Legend.
I was like, we like Tim Curry.
Yeah, well, Tim Curry plays the devil.
He would.
And it's your typical, like, huge horns, big red scary guy devil. But Tom Cruise before he went crazy.
Fucking hate Tom Cruise.
But he's running around the jungle in a loincloth.
Tom Cruise can go die for all I care. The second example, major example that you see in medieval times of allegory is dragons, which I thought was kind of funny. That was the example Wikipedia. They were always identified as some form of serpent, but their attributes were greatly intensified because they were supposed to be larger than any animal known. Any animal. It was the dragon would always be bigger than whatever was in the picture. They had no harmful poison, but were able to slay anything type thing. But the Bible started to quote it as the devil. It denoted sin in the medieval ages. So if you saw a dragon in some form of thing, it meant the devil, the sins. And they thought that it dwelt in hot, in very warm places, like Ethiopia and India, which I thought was weird, back in like medieval Europe.
Dragons exist in a lot of different cultures, as you said.
Yeah. But
Yeah, they do a lot of like weird assumptions and tie-ins. Like, you
Yeah.
know, they had dragons in different myths and legends before that, obviously, and different like serpents and stuff. But they don't really get the association of fire as much until
Yeah.
you get into when they start tying it to the devil.
Yeah.
There are some records of them breathing fire, but that's like, you know, any association with any element depending on which culture you're in. But yeah, I mean, like you said, literally every culture has had some variation of a dragon. I mean, you know, the Aztecs actually had a dragon god, Quetzalcoatl,
Yeah.
which some people would argue that it's not a dragon, but if you look at its description and everything, it's a dragon.
So yeah, in the medieval times, the kind of mythical creatures start to become symbolic for other things. Like a griffin is seen as the guardian of the dead. I thought it was a little interesting. The basilisk a lot of times is also seen as the devil, and the dove would symbolize the Holy Spirit because we gotta put Jesus into everything. Because they weren't really interested in being physically accurate about things. They just wanted to get their art and their allegorical story out there.
Well, in a lot of those old paintings and stuff, especially during the Renaissance, there's actually a lot of occult iconography and hidden messages and
Yes.
hidden meanings in a lot of those as well. And I think we'll probably at some point do an episode on occult art, because that's a whole other thing.
So now we're going to get into the list of mythical creatures that I thought people would know. Skelkie, Scottish. They're,
That's okay.
yeah, shape-shifting seal people that
Yep.
transform when they shed their skin.
Yep.
That picture was weird.
There's actually a really great movie, kind of a, well,
He got a movie for everything.
no. So, like you said Scottish, so this, I have to plug this in. So there's a really great, there's three movies that aren't technically sequels. You don't have to watch them in any order, but the creators refer to them as the Celtic mythology trilogy, and so they have to do with like Celtic mythology and stuff. The first one is The Secret of Kells. The second one, which has the Selkie in it, is Song of the Sea, and then the third one is Wolfwalker. I have yet to watch Wolfwalker. It came out last year, but they are three really, really amazing animated films that tie in a lot of traditional Celtic imagery and mythology into them.
You have a movie for everything. Myrmidons.
How's it spelled?
Myrmidons.
Mirrodons?
Myrmidons.
What is that?
It is Greek.
Okay.
They were warriors created from ants by Zeus. You see them in the Iliad because they are commanded by Achilles, the most famous griffin. And there's different variations of griffins. They are Greek. They have the head and wings of an eagle, but the body, legs, and tail of a lion. They would guard treasure and priceless possessions. You have the owl man. I'm interpreting that as England's Mothman.
He's also a super villain and an alternate version of Batman. Yes, look it up. He's an
You're
alternate
ridiculous.
version of Batman and a super villain.
You have the rain bird, Native American, which would bring rain. Harpy, which is Greek, an ugly winged bird woman that would steal food. You have the Valkyrie, which is not how they are portrayed in Thor. They would choose who would live and who would die, but they are all female. They're not female warriors. They would just decide who would live and die on the battlefield.
Well,
You
they
have
would take the souls to Valhalla.
Yeah. But, like, I think Thor kind of portrays the movie. They kind of portray them as these woman warriors, female warriors. And it's...
Yeah, I mean, they were warriors in a sense, but not exactly the way that they're portrayed. I mean, of course, it's a comic book movie with superheroes and stuff. Everything's... And let's be honest, for those who know their mythology, especially their Norse mythology, there ain't much that's right about love Stan Lee, love his creations, but there is not much that's right about the stuff there.
No. And I know minuscule. You have genies, which kind of show up in a couple different forms. Hippogriff. It is French, so France and England. A winged horse with the head and upper body of an eagle. Siren. I found siren spelled with an I and an E. I'm assuming the R-I-N would be the Russian version. And the R-E-N is the Greek version. Because I knew of, like, sirens to be the women that sang, that lured men to their death. They're also birds with women's heads that would lure men to their death. So I got a little confused with that.
I mean, I could ask a Slav. I do have a Russian friend.
Yeah. Like, I would be curious, because I spelled it, I saw it on Wikipedia spelled both ways. R-I-N and R-E-N. I know the R-E-N was definitely the Greek version. Black dogs and hellhounds. That shows up in a lot of different places, a lot of places all over the world. I do know that they're not always the bringer of death. I do know that they would, when they would have a new graveyard, they would put a dog in there first, because it was believed that the first soul buried within the cemetery or the graveyard would be kept there. So they would do a dog to protect the graveyard. I don't know if it might be always the bringer of death. If it's just like a specific black dog. Not quite sure. You have Cerberus. The multi-head dog that guards the underworld. I thought this was interesting. Sky fox. It is Chinese. It is a celestial nine-tailed fox spirit that is 1,000 years old. And it has golden fur.
Yeah, so there's a lot of the oriental countries have, all the countries in the Orient region have something similar. The Japanese have the Kitsune.
Yeah. You have werewolves. Those are
their castle.
Huh?
Sorry, movie quote. You said werewolf. I said their wolf, their castle.
Oh, I didn't even hear what you said. They're worldwide. Different cultures have different views. Blue Mountains panther. That is specific to Australia. Mermaids and mermen. All over the world. A moon rabbit, which is Chinese. It was the rabbit that lived on the moon. That's what they made sense with, what the moon looked like. You have your banshee, leprechaun, dwarves, gnomes, goblins, all that nice jazz. Yep. Red cap, hydra, unicorn, basilisk, pegasus, dragons of all forms, gargons, which is what Medusa is considered. A jackalope is considered a mythical creature.
They're all so real.
It's not. They're not real.
Totally real.
It's not real.
How is it not real?
It's a jackrabbit with antlers sewn onto it. It's not real.
It's real. I've seen it.
Whatever. And I'm the queen.
Like, how would you burrow with antlers? Like, how does that make sense?
Deer woman. It's a Native American entity. It's kind of like their version of a centaur. It's female from the waist up, and then it is deer from the waist down. Minotaur, which I want to say is mainly found in Crete.
Yeah, so the Minotaur itself is, without going into the full story, the king of Crete, I believe, pissed off Poseidon, and he cursed his wife to be infatuated with a bull. And so there was a whole thing set up where she done the dirty deed with the bull and got knocked up, and that was the offspring.
Who lived in a maze below the kingdom. So we have the head of a bull, body of a man. Then you have the centaur, which got famous with Harry Potter. Head, arms, torso of a human, but body and legs of a horse. And then I forget what the one in Narnia is called, where he's half goat, half man.
The fawn?
Yes, thank you.
It's either a fawn or a satyr, whether you're talking about Greek or Roman.
Yeah. I think it's a satyr in, it's that movie in Spanish with Doug Jones.
Oh, you're talking about Pan's Labyrinth.
Thank you. That's one of my favorite movies.
It's up there. I mean, Doug Jones is amazing.
Love Doug Jones.
Batman. And he's such a sweetheart.
He is. And that's the thing is, you know who Doug Jones is, but you don't know who he is. You know his characters. You just don't know his face.
I mean, I think I've seen Doug Jones in enough things.
That oh, tell yeah. But Jones. Like, people don't understand that he's Abe in Hellboy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he's that weird man in that is it Legend movie where his jaw gets real long.
The ice cream man.
Yes. He's a couple.
He is Captain Saru in Star Trek Discovery.
Yep. And I want to say he's a Silver Surfer.
Uh-huh. And he's the body of the Silver Surfer.
Yes. He's the body, not the voice. In Pan's Labyrinth, he plays a couple different characters.
Mm-hmm.
The centaurs, the fawn, and the guy with the eyeballs in his hands. That's a great movie. Back to my list. Because we could talk about Doug Jones all day.
this is the Doug Jones podcast. All Doug Jones. Doug Jones.
I love that man. I found it funny. The gingerbread man is considered a mythical creature. Vampires. Skinwalkers. For those who are not familiar with that, it's Navajo culture. So Native American. It's a harmful witch that has the ability to turn into, possess, or disguise as an animal. So it's a form of a shapeshifter, but not quite. It's kind of like a medicine woman man that goes bad. You have red caps. And there's a red cap that's like specific to a place in Michigan. I found this one interesting. Baku, B-A-K-U. It's Japanese. It's a supernatural being that is said to devour nightmares. Weird looking creature.
That is actually what Hypno, the Pokemon, is based off of.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense now.
That's what he's based off of.
That makes a lot of sense. Because, like, the picture, it had, like, a long snout and stuff. Now that you've said that, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was created by the spare parts left over when the gods finished creating all the other animals. So it's just a hodgepodge menagerie just stuck together.
That's what happened to the platypus.
Shut up. I hate you.
Just remember, the platypus is the only animal that you can actually make a full custard pie with. It lays eggs. It lays eggs. It produces milk.
You were just so wrong on so many levels. But that is my list of mythical creatures that I just found interesting or that people may know.
There's also the chimera, which is, you know, typically a mix of, depending on its depiction, but a lot of times it's got like a goat head, a lion head, and like a
scorpion. Oh, yeah.
So it also sometimes is a mix between a little girl and a dog, but that's specific for our alchemist list.
Can we not?
No. One no. time. Anytime I can mention Nina Tucker, I mention Nina Tucker.
You are ridiculous today.
Yeah. This is why I'm not allowed out in public.
That's my list of mythical creatures, and what a mythical creature technically is. So cryptid is a mythological creature that they have proven in some form to be real, whether it's an eyewitness account, trail cam footage, trail cam photo, motion sense, all your normal like ghost hunting equipment that proves it to be some form of real. And then cryptozoology is the study of the mythological creatures that they have proven real, even though none of them have the right credentials and don't play well with other scientists.
So what about, give me a second because I gotta look up this because I don't remember what it's called. Oh, that is it. So what about machine elves?
Are they part technology and part elf?
No.
you gotta give me more clues than just a name.
So machine elves, also known as fractal elves, self-transforming elves, or Jenny, is a term coined by the late ethnobotanist, writer, and philosopher Terence McKenna to describe the apparent entities that are often reported by individuals using DMT.
So DMT is a drug.
It is a thing that is released by your brain at birth and death.
Mm-hmm. That you can replicate.
But all these people seem to have this similar... So that's ultimately my thing, is you have all these people who have similar experiences, regardless of where they're at or, you know, what their culture is in certain aspects. But you have different people who have similar creatures, similar things that show up with mm-hmm. their experiences.
And that's the thing that separates the mythological creature from the cryptid, is the cryptid has some form of, some form of accountability, whether people have seen it, so you have your eyewitness accounts, you know, because that's a lot of what this is somebody sees something. They see it. Mythological creature is some form of tale. You know, you have the tale of Hydra. You have the tale of Tommyknockers. You have tales of, well, I guess Tommyknockers would be considered more of a cryptid, even though they're heard more than seen. You know, Medusa. Medusa was a tale. It was never really, she was never seen. You know, so that's kind of what differentiates it. Is there some form of evidence, whether it's somebody sees it? So if all these people are having the same experience, there might be a link because of what it activates in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it too.
Well, yeah. I mean, that would go back to quantum mechanics.
That might be it too, is that it might be activating the same parts in the brain in all these people when they're taking it.
I've never experienced anything like that because I've never done DMT, do I plan on it. I just thought that was a interesting little plug thing there.
I would say that it's classified as cryptid only because there's some form of evidence. These people have seen it. It's not.
It's like an interdimensional being, yeah. I guess, would be.
Yeah.
Like the Fae. Would the Fae be considered cryptids, or would they can be considered because people have seen things, people have experienced things having to do with the fairies, but you know, that's a I would say the Fae are interdimensional beings.
I would say too, they're kind of like their own entity, they're their own thing.
Yeah, I feel like there should be I feel like that should be a third category all on its own.
Yeah,
or kind of a cross between the two. I don't know. It's like a Venn diagram, and that's like a third section.
Yeah. Well, I saw like all the cryptids were listed as mythological creatures on Wikipedia. Like it was both. I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, because it's interesting what we as humans have spun, the tales of creatures and stuff like that. So. Well, I find it interesting.
You know, going back to, I mean, some of it could be perception of what we're able to perceive and what we're able to process with our brains as well. I mean, after all, believing is seeing.
For a lot of people, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I did find that the cryptid mythological creature debate is a big gray area. It's a big gray area. The whole thing.
And in reality, we're all just, you know, simulations in a computer program.
The new Matrix comes out the 22nd.
I will not be seeing it.
You don't gotta make Matrix references.
That's like a whole conspiracy. There's people who actually believe that this is a simulation and nothing is real.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that think that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Which, I could go on to a long tangent on that, but I won't.
We won't do that today.
Not on this episode.
No.
So I think, does that about wrap up your notes?
Yes. That's all I got. That's all I had time for. You got, like, cryptozoology, like, itself, that... I could go on a lot more on that, on the gentleman that founded it. Because, I mean, it was founded by two gentlemen. I did not write their names down. Yeah.
Bob and Dwayne.
No. Bernard Helvemans and Ivan T. Sanderson are credited as being the founders of cryptozoology. Yeah, I could go on about cryptozoology because it's considered a subculture all on its own, which I found kind of interesting. So,
definitely. But
yeah, this wraps it up for. Yeah, that wraps up for this episode. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and tell a friend. We do have a Facebook page, The Wayward Dragons, and we do have an email, The Wayward Dragons. @gmail.com. If you have a first-hand account of interacting with cryptid, email us and let us know. And everyone have safe travels over the holiday. Everyone have a very happy new year. And we will see everybody in the new year.
And if you're going to drink responsibly, guys.
Yes. Always have a DD.
Yeah. So. Kelsey's pointing at herself. Kelsey doesn't drink.
No.
Kelsey's pointing at herself.
I'm my boyfriend's permanent designate.
I mean, you know.
It ensures he gets home safely and I don't have to worry about it, so.
Yep. And then if anyone asks if you're drinking, you'd be like, nope, I'm the DD.
Yeah. There's no shit. There's always shame in saying that you drink. They're always like, why don't you drink? I'm like, because I don't. And that's all we're going to talk about it. It's not your business.
But anyways.
Yeah.
We're signing off. So until next time, I'm Johnny.
And I'm Kelsey. Bye. Bye.